Our second case of this morning, number 20-3463, Manavanan v. United States Department of Energy, Messrs. Powell and McHale. Take your time setting up. Whenever you're ready. You can take your mask off.
Okay. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is John Powell for Appellant, Dr. Iyakanu Manivanan.
How do you say the gentleman's name?
It's Iyakanu Manivanan.
Manivanan. Okay. Thank you.
Dr. Manivanan actually goes by Manny almost all the time, so okay. If I slip and call him Manny, that's what he goes by. So I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal if I can.
That's fine.
Thanks. This case presents what is actually a simple question. Can a federal agency commit torts and violate the Privacy Act of 1974 with impunity just because the victim of their conduct is an employee of the agency?
Well, I mean, my first question, we've got to tap the jurisdictional issues here.
Yep.
Did the magistrate judge err in dismissing Mr. Manivanan's Privacy Act and Federal Tort Claims Act claims for lack of federal jurisdiction? So if you could address that first, because that's a big issue.
Sure. So the district court dismissed the claims as being precluded by the CSRA, saying that essentially because the CSRA regulates employment at federal agencies, Dr. Manivanan cannot bring a Privacy Act claim or an FTCA claim any time, and no federal employee could bring in one of those claims any time the claim only arose as a result of their employment at the agency. Right. In other words, if they hadn't been employed at the agency, this claim never would have arisen.
I think they went out of their way to say they weren't framing it that way. They were trying to frame it along the lines of you, trying to frame it along the lines of Cerullo, and that if these things arose from, if it's arising from the employment relationship, then the Civil Service Reform Act very deliberately channels those claims into the Merit Systems Protection Board and then to the Federal Circuit. Now, let's assume for the sake of argument that that's what we thought the argument was. What is wrong with that argument? How is it, if we accepted that that is the framing, do you acknowledge that, it doesn't matter what other claims you've got, if they're arising from the employment relationship, then that complaint belongs in the Merit System Protection Board system?
Thank you, Your Honor. First, that would preclude, the preclusion that would result in would be much too broad. So, for example, if that were really the test, this court would never have exercised jurisdiction in a case like Quinn v. Stone, where someone was alleging that they had a dispute with someone at work, and that resulted in their federal agency.
We don't know that anybody ever raised the preclusion issue in that case, right? I mean, there are certainly going to be instances where no party raises an argument, and so you just go past it. The court doesn't address it.
Your Honor, the other problem with that is that basically, like, there is no relief in the MSPB for a Privacy Act claim. I don't think it's really disputed in this case that the MSPB cannot exercise jurisdiction over Privacy Act claims, and it also cannot exercise jurisdiction over FTCA claim. So if the ruling is that broad, then you're essentially denying every federal employee the right to any protection under the Privacy Act. And you're also telling federal agencies that although they are very restricted in what they can do with all of their records that they collect about people, there's a huge exception to that in that they can do whatever they want with any records that they collect about their employees.
Are you saying that to them, or are we saying what the Supreme Court said in the Bush case, which is, look, you may not be able to get relief there, but you develop your factual record and you get that in front of the federal circuit, and then you let them take care of it when you get there. That's still the system.
I think there's an important distinction with Bush, Your Honor, because Bush was dealing with Bivens claims. And that's a huge distinction in this case. We're dealing with statutory claims. So Congress went out of its way in 1974 to say, you know, everyone can sue a federal agency for this. And then, so but it's different in Bush, where a Bivens claim is a judicially created remedy. So the principles of judicial restraint suggest that if Congress has come into an area and decided to regulate it, why would a judge be creating a new remedy in that area? However, when Congress has created its own...
Why doesn't that argument work just as well against you? If Congress has created an elaborate Civil Service Reform Act system for addressing employee complaints, a system which, in fact, your client used and made many, many of the same... I mean, he's framed the claim differently legally, but these are all flowing from the same set of facts that he argued about in his claim before the Merit System Protection Board. Why wouldn't the very same argument you're making, which is Congress has set the bounds here, prompt us to say, yeah, Congress has set the bounds here, and you're supposed to go to the Merit Systems Protection Board, and he did, and he lost, and that's pretty much the end of it.
But if Congress has created the FTCA, and if Congress has created the Privacy Act prior to CSRA, why should federal employees not be entitled to relief from these other congressionally created acts just because of their federal employment?
That's right, Your Honor. In this case, the facts are very different than all the other cases that we've talked about so far. Here, a federal agency employee, Mr. Mark Hunsaker, and this is completely different from what was alleged in the MSPB case. The MSPB case did not...
Talk about the internal investigation.
Okay.
Why is that not a fit within the CSRA?
Well, yeah, actually, as the MSPB judge in this case ruled early on, and as other cases show, the conducting of an investigation, here it's called the MDI, is not an adverse personnel action against someone. And the reason it's not is because, in theory, when somebody hires someone to come in and do an investigation, they're supposed to be an objective third party who's just coming in to decide whether or not an adverse personnel action has to be taken.
Did the investigation result in a significant change in working conditions?
It did not, Your Honor. Nothing that happened in the investigation, because the person who's conducting...
administrative leave? He was eventually removed?
That's right. So administrative leave, as long as it's under pay, is not considered an adverse personnel action or a significant change in his working conditions, because that's not something that you could take to the MSPB.
He resigns because he says, as I understand it, as I read it, he resigns effectively under protest because of the outcome of the investigation. And then he engages in litigation, multiple kinds of litigation, including an MSPB complaint. So clearly he thought...
He thinks so.
He had an adverse outcome.
Well, but Your Honor, that's not the adverse outcome that we're claiming here.
Well, you certainly thought it was a significant change in his working relationship. On leave and then terminated and taken out of the situation there. What is almost a paradigm case for fitting within the CSRA, right?
Your Honor, if he was challenging adverse personnel actions in this case, then you're right that he should go to the MSPB. But it's not an allowed adverse personnel action to blatantly violate the Privacy Act.
Tell me what fits within the CSRA and what doesn't, generally speaking.
Okay, Your Honor. So we would say that CSRA, we don't deny that CSRA precludes some claims from coming into district court. It precludes claims from coming into district court if it arises out of or is based on something that is an adverse personnel action or is a prohibited personnel practice. So, for example, Dr. Manuvanan did have whistleblower claims. He alleged that his supervisor, his former supervisor, Dr. Gemmon, that he made a disclosure to him in 2011 and that Dr. Gemmon transferred him immediately thereafter. Actually, the disclosure was 2010 and he transferred him in 2011. He made another disclosure to him in 2014 and he transferred him again. And he does allege in that these other things flowed from Dr. Gemmon, you know, from his disclosures to Dr. Gemmon. But that's not what we're alleging here. Here we're dealing with a Privacy Act violation.
Take a step back.
Okay.
I ask you a general question.
Okay.
What fits within the CSRA? What doesn't fit?
So a claim challenging a personnel action, if someone were to... Okay, so for example, here, after they conduct this investigation...
I'm asking you, just forget this case for the moment. Okay. What fits within the CSRA? What doesn't?
Within the CSRA are personnel actions and prohibited personnel practices. And if it's not that,
and
it doesn't fit.
This is not a personal. Now come back to this case. This is not a personnel action.
The conduct of a MDI is not a personnel action because again, it's not. They're just going to decide whether to do something against you or not. And most importantly, taking a bunch of records and handing them out.
It was investigated for what?
He was being investigated because a former intern alleged that he had harassed her. Those claims...
Very serious sexual harassment claims.
Right? Which he has been acquitted... I mean, many of those claims the jury acquitted him of, and the rest of those claims have been vacated.
Many acquitted him of. Just take it as a given that the fact that he's acquitted on the stalking claim,
right,
convicted on everything else,
but only
that is then overturned on appeal, which is... different from an acquittal, but leave that aside, that it still stands that he was found by this investigation to have done those things that constitute improper conduct, abuse of position, et cetera, and that all of that is in the record and it's sort of a given, that's in the record.
But whether
he did those things or not.
Right, he didn't do those things.
Right.
But,
I mean, that's to decide. And I understand you guys complain. I fully understand that you reject that. But it's a matter of historical record. The MSPB found that he was properly removed, so to speak, based on those allegations. Would you agree with that?
I wouldn't agree that the MSPB actually found that he did those things, but I would agree that
I didn't say that. They found that his removal was, they upheld the removal based on the...
I think what they held was that he failed to show that his disclosure, like, caused Dr. Gemmon to cause his removal.
Okay. So you've got then a circumstance where he, as your opponents put it, it looks like he's trying to have it both ways. He characterizes all of this as a workplace vendetta. They're out to get him. They took him off of a paper that he was properly an author of. And everything that follows is this workplace vendetta. And they're doing bad things to him, including initiating the investigation, and that the investigation results in false accusations, and he's entitled to.
Why don't you add 5 minutes on, please?
He's entitled to get back in because of that. How is this different from Cerullo, where the postal employee says, "Look, I'm entitled to make these claims," and the court simply says, "Yeah, no, you're not, because these are claims arising from your employment. There's not some independent basis in federal tort law that you get to invoke, because if you've got complaints of this sort that come out of your employment, a workplace vendetta, you resolve them in the CSRA system."
If I may, so although he describes a workplace vendetta in an OS, a pro se OSC thing that he filed with the before the MSPB, but since he has had counsel, he has never said, and he's never said anywhere that Mark Hunsaker was aware of the disclosures against him, or that the conduct that Mark Hunsaker, you know, did when he took all these records and handed them over essentially illegally to state prosecutors, that was motivated by, Dr. Gemmon. I think that's a separate thing.
Let's go back to the internal investigation. I thought Mr. Manavanan challenged the internal investigation as a, quote, personnel action, close quote, in the MSPB proceeding.
Yeah, Your Honor, he challenged the initiation.
He did challenge it as a personnel action, right?
No, he challenged the initiation of the investigation as a personnel action. There's some law that says that it is, and the MSPB judge thought that it is, but the conduct of it is not.
Because it is, he says, a personnel action.
The initiation of it is a personnel action, but the conduct of it is not. That's what the law says on this. I know that sounds strange.
How do you place that baloney?
Well, it's because, it's not actually an adverse personnel action, but they have found that you can make a whistleblower claim for a retaliatory investigation if someone who you've offended at work goes out of their way to start an investigation. But once an investigation is started, it's supposed to be an objective thing where they're just determining whether or not, you know, you actually did something.
I thought he was claiming that the investigation was negligently performed. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, it was.
And it resulted in his being removed. And you're kind of saying that's not even a significant change in working conditions?
No, Your Honor. What we're saying is, I'm not saying that his removal is not a significant change. I'm saying that another thing that happened because of this negligent investigation and this privacy ad violation is that he was prosecuted for a bunch of computer counts in Center County and then was wrongly convicted of them. And that as soon as the district attorney there changed, the old district attorney was suspended from the practice of law, and the new district attorney said, we're not going to bring these counts and dismiss them with prejudice. He would never have been prosecuted for the computer counts for some of the claims in the state law case if there hadn't been this bogus investigation, which then got handed over to the state law, to the state prosecutors.
Let's go to the document that
you're going to stay up here as long as you.
Okay, I'm happy to stay here with that.
Okay.
The document noting his separation was an SF-50, right?
Well, no, there are different things, Your Honor. So the
what claims did you make based on a purportedly inaccurate SF-50 document?
Yes, Your Honor. So after he resigned, they issued an SF-50 form, which is a record of a personnel action. It's not itself a personnel action, but it's a record of one. And in that form, they said that the agency had made a finding that he had engaged in misconduct. And that's not true. It's procedurally inaccurate because.
What was he challenging as a result of the claimed inaccuracy of the SF-50 form?
Well, it makes it impossible for him to get another job at a federal agency.
Two and five that make that deal with that?
I'm sorry, say again.
Counts 2 and 5 of the complaint deal with that, is that correct?
That's right, Your Honor, yes.
So what was he challenging?
He was challenging the fact that they have a record that says that the agency made a finding when they didn't make a finding. We're not challenging, you know, the contents of that finding, but it's inaccurate to say that the agency made a finding of wrongdoing against him before he resigned. That didn't happen. The CSRA...
So in the end, he's not challenging the disciplinary and corrective action?
Absolutely not, no.
Absolutely not?
Yes, only we just want them to change that form, yes.
Absolutely not?
Absolutely not.
So what are counts 2 and 5? Why are they even in here?
Because it makes it impossible for him to get another job at a federal agency when they have a record. Because when you go to try to get a new job at a federal agency, they look at your SF-50, and if the SF-50 says the old agency made a finding of misconduct against me and that's not true, that's preventing him from getting another job. So that's just why they're in here.
I do have, if you'll indulge me. Let's assume let's shift back to the earlier argument, which is if you confine Mr. Manivannan to the CSRA system, he'll be without a remedy for some significant wrongs.
That's right.
Now that's a serious argument, but it's been addressed by some other circuits, and then judge before he was Chief Justice Roberts seemed to say that a kind of a so what to that in the Fornaro case, where he said, as far as determinations under the CSRA is concerned, what you get is what you get. In other words, you sign on for federal employment, and you may not get all the relief that other people get. You get a certain system, and that's what you get.
Your Honor, if I could make just two quick points. So first, courts across the country have exercised jurisdiction over claims just like this one. I would point you to the Covert case, but also to Quinn, also to Spade, also to Minshew, Hallis, Brunot, Dopey v. Gross. I mean, there are many cases where this gets addressed, and on the what and you get is what you get. I agree with that.
Do any of them say, yeah, we've looked at this and we're paying attention to what the CSRA is, and
yes,
there's been a preemption argument, and
yes, Your Honor, some of them do. I believe Covert has that analysis.
How do you deal with the Mangano case out of the Ninth Circuit, where they said that the possibility that you might be left without a remedy doesn't matter?
And Your Honor, I don't dispute what you get is what you get, but the problem here is this is not what you get under the CSRA, because the CSRA does not claim to govern Privacy Act violations. So it's not like we're in the rubric of the CSRA. When you're thinking about CSRA preclusion, you have to think about, you know, what you get is what you get to me means if you can bring a claim, if the MSB has jurisdiction over it but can't afford you relief, then too bad. And I agree with that. Mm. But if the MSB doesn't have jurisdiction over it, why are we not, you know, why are we leaving these wrongs unrighted and depriving jurisdiction that Congress granted to the district courts? So I'll.
Gotcha. Let's hear from your opposing counsel. We'll get you back to the rebuttal.
Thanks.
Mr. McHale.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Matthew McHale on behalf of the appellees, United States Department of Energy and the United States. It's a pleasure to be here in person also in a courtroom, so thank you. I would like to start actually by focusing on Dr. Manivannan's allegations in this case, because I think they do show that what he is challenging here is essentially personnel actions, prohibited personnel practices that are found in also the proceeding that he took up through the MSPB. And ultimately,
here, tell me if I'm correct or incorrect. There's three sort of general areas. We've got the internal investigation and what comes out of that, the cooperation with the state prosecutor and giving them information, and then also the claim failure to return personal property. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's one way to look at it, although, so what I would say is those are linked in Dr. Manivannan's own words. For example, when he says, quote, NETL supported my conviction and ultimate imprisonment to justify removal. So he says that. He also says...
Is there anything else, I mean, in terms of the various grouping of the accounts, and they may be linked in some way, obviously, because he was investigated, he was terminated, ultimately turned over to the state authorities. There was a trial, partial acquittal, partial conviction, overturned on appeal, et cetera. So there is a link, no doubt, but is there anything, am I misstating the general areas here?
I mean, I don't know that I would, so, I mean, they all fall under the context of a workplace vendetta, I guess. The way he lays it out in the complaint, he starts by
Well, they don't all fall in. I mean, you heard Mr. Powell say that Mr. Hunsicker's behavior was, there's no indication that Mr. Hunsicker was in on some vendetta, but he's wholesale taking records that are protected and handing them over to state authorities when arguably they shouldn't be handed over to state authorities. They should be protected. That's not a workplace vendetta. That's a government employee going off the rails and violating Mr. Manivannan's right to privacy according to the allegations of the complaint. How is that covered by the Civil Service Reform Act and part of a workplace vendetta?
Well, he has alleged that the investigation, which he did challenge as a retaliatory personnel practice, was done in order to assemble documents to give to the prosecutor.
I don't hear him disagreeing that the MDI was ill-motivated and part of a vendetta. In fact, I think he just acknowledged that at the podium. What I hear him saying, what I want you to respond to, is his assertion that has nothing to do in a legal sense with what Hunsicker did, that this is not but-for causation that we're talking about. We're talking about an independent wrong that Hunsicker undertook and that he should have some right and a remedy for. That's what I'm asking you to respond to.
Well, I guess so. I would start by looking at the text of the Civil Service Reform Act, which is very, I mean, as Your Honor has said. It's very broad. It's not to be interpreted in a cramped way. And in the text of the Civil Service Reform Act, when it lays out the merit system principles that Congress wanted to protect, it specifically says that all employees should receive fair and equitable treatment in all aspects of personnel management with proper regard for their privacy and constitutional rights. So privacy,
But Hunsinger turning over the documents, how is that a, quote, personnel action, close quote, under the CSRA?
Well, if it's in furtherance of the attempt to remove Dr. Manivannan, which is what Dr. Manivannan has alleged. So Dr. Manivannan has said...
But what does turning the documents over to a police authority have to do with removing Dr. Manivannan?
I would suggest that to take Dr. Manivannan at his word, which is this was part of a plot, which is his word, that and the plot is specifically referring to cooperation between Mr. Hunsaker and the prosecutor. So that's a plot that was part of a, quote, continued vendetta, and the attempt to get him convicted in prison was part of his employer's intent to remove him. So I can imagine hypothetical situations
it's
where...
It's not claimed that that's a personnel action. Is it the turning over of documents to the DA's office there in Center County? Nobody's arguing that that was a, quote, personnel action, are they?
I think it depends how, where you sort of place the lens.
I'm asking you now. Are you claiming that Hunsaker's action in turning over documents constitutes a personnel action within the meaning of the CSRA and the associated regulations? Because if that's what's being claimed, that strikes me as new.
I mean, I don't know that you can necessarily slice it that fine because...
Don't we have to slice it that fine? Because the argument being made to us is... CSRA does protect people, and it protects people in the context of personnel actions, but it was never meant to disenfranchise federal workers from being able to take advantage of general statutory schemes that are supposed to protect everybody, like the Privacy Act and the Federal Tort Claims Act. That's the pitch that's being made to us. What's wrong with that? Why shouldn't we say, okay, things that are personnel actions, you got to go to the MSPB, and if they're not personnel actions and there's a wrong, there's a remedy. Congress has enacted it, and... The government has waived its sovereign immunity with respect to those things. It's got to face the music. That's the pitch being made. You got to take that on.
Because courts have taken a much broader approach than just looking at, for example, in Cerullo. So Cerullo addressed the argument whether an allegedly improper recording of an employee was preempted. And I think the argument, I'm going to sort of analogize it. I think the argument there was sort of similar in that, well, we know the Supreme Court has said that...
Wasn't Cerullo like a Bivens case?
It was, yes.
Yeah,
but,
and Bivens is judge-created law as opposed to congressionally created remedies for certain actions.
Agreed. But so two things. Number one, as I said, privacy itself is specifically included as a merit system principle that is protected under the CSRA.
But they say that, but do you think by saying the word privacy in the CSRA... That indicates a congressional intent that the Privacy Act doesn't apply to federal employees?
I would not state it so broadly, no. But where we have multiple examples of Privacy Act claims being preempted, not only in you, but also in Kleiman and Orsay, other cases we've cited. So
in Cerullo itself, there were discrimination claims and retaliation claims that were treated on the merits, right?
I believe that's right, yes.
Okay. Under your reasoning, shouldn't Cerullo have said those things are out too, preempted?
I would say, so discrimination claims are a little bit different, and actually I would argue support our position in that, as the Supreme Court said in Elgin, discrimination claims are a specific carve-out of the CSRA, which sort of proceed along what's called like a mixed case or something, where Congress has allowed for that kind of claim, Title VII.
They've also allowed for Privacy Act claims and for FCTA claims.
Well, so the CSRA does not carve out privacy claims brought under the Privacy Act statute. I mean, although, as I said, it does protect privacy as an interest that is to be protected under merit system principles. So, I mean, to get back to your question, Judge Jordan, about, you know, whether the actual handing over of material itself was a personnel action, I don't think the law, CSRA, requires you to take such a close-in view, because if you slice it that finely, you can separate out any sort of subcomponent of a personnel action that's happening. And that's where I brought up Cerullo to say that there the court talked about a recording perhaps being something that might in other circumstances be independent and independently actionable, but because it comes out of, you know, the court's view, a common sense reading of the CSRA, and it relates to disputes, grievances that sort of center on the person's employment, it gets preempted by the CSRA.
What does the government's refusal to let Mr. Manavanan have back his personal objects, which he had left in his office?
I look at that in the context of, again, a workplace vendetta.
But that's a conversion claim he made, right?
Yeah.
It is. Now, I would analogize that.
It had nothing to do with a personnel action against him.
Well, to me, well, so I would say two things. Number one, I think you actually did have an analogous situation.
Okay, but we're not bound by you.
Correct, Your Honor, yes. So there you had an employee who claimed an entitlement to certain property. Now, ultimately, you know, the government, his employer, disputed that. But he was saying, I want this property back, even though he had been, you know, he'd been fired by then. I think here it would be anomalous to have.
So how does that conversion claim fit within the context of what the CSRA wants to cover?
He has alleged that, you know, his employers were out to get him for years, and that
nobody's denying that. What we're trying to get at is, what do you do for an employee? We're going to have to write a decision here, right? Mr. McHale, if we write a decision that says, this all comes out of a workplace vendetta, so it's all done, you're done, does that really put employees in a position where the government can say, leave right now, and all this personal stuff of yours that happened to be in your office that you worked in for the last 20 years, you're never seeing it again, see you, sucker. I mean, and you don't have any right to come back to us. There's nothing you can do about that. You're just done. How do we write a decision that leaves that door open?
I mean, that seems to me connected to his alleged, you know, forced resignation, although the MSPB found that it was a voluntary resignation. If supervisors
assume it's that, is it really the case? Is it the government's position that once we fire you, we can just keep your stuff? Doesn't
no.
matter.
No, that is not. That is. Well, then, I would not put it that way.
If that's not your position, what is your position? Because what you're saying is, we can keep his stuff, and he's got no claim in this instance because it's all part of a workplace vendetta.
Let me ask it another way. What category of personnel action does the refusal to return personal property fit?
I think it would be connected to an alleged improper removal. I mean, if supervisors.
Oh, he's already gone.
I'm sorry.
He's already gone.
Right, but but cases like Cerullo and you don't draw such an absolute hard and fast line, and it would not be a workable line that.
Well, why wouldn't it be a workable line?
I think.
What protection do you have if you're a government employee?
Well, so the CSRA, I mean, briefly to go back to sort of broad principles, is supposed to be comprehensive, and so I think that if you had an employee who gets fired improperly, his supervisor, they slam the door on him. They say, see you later. We're kicking you off the property. Don't come back. And then he brings, a claim under the CSRA. And they kept his property. Let's say he's got, you know, he left a stapler in his office that belonged to him.
Well, why don't you make it something a little more meaningful than a stapler? And why don't you also assume that they fired him improperly?
Sure, absolutely.
Or they fired him. Doesn't matter whether they fire him properly or improperly.
So an employee is entitled to quite a broad range of remedies under the CSRA, including consequential damages if they're reasonable and foreseeable, and compensatory damages, which is similar to what Dr. Manivanan here is he's seeking $600,000+ in that conversion claim for the value of the property that he alleges he took, which, I mean, by the way, we deny and we have given back to him.
But what you're saying is he's not without a remedy under the CSRA.
Correct.
The FTCA doesn't need to come in because he's got a remedy available.
Correct. Although, and I would add on, however, that's not, that doesn't have to be the case for the CSRA to apply because, as you were saying earlier, to opposing counsel, sometimes what you get is what you get. But I think the CSRA does have very broad remedies under Section 1214.
What's the protection? Is there any protection analogous to the Privacy Act, or is the government free to just use and abuse the privacy of its employees because they're bound by the CSRA and the Privacy Act doesn't apply? Done.
There is protection for, certainly for privacy interests under the CSRA, because where Congress has said that we expect personnel decisions will be made with regard for an employee's privacy rights and constitutional rights, and then if an employee suffers a personnel action like significant change in duties, and then the employee can bring a claim that the supervisor took a personnel action that violates any law, rule, or regulation implementing or
That's where the rabbit's going in the hat, Mr. McHale, because the assertion is Hunsicker's action was not a personnel action. And I don't even hear you saying it was a personnel action. You're studiously avoiding saying that was a personnel action. So that's the argument. CSRA covers personnel actions. This is a violation that doesn't fit that bucket. And maybe the answer is you get what you get, and so there isn't a remedy for that. But if that's the case, go ahead and say so.
Well, the violation of the alleged disclosure to the prosecutors was one part of a campaign to remove him. So I don't think that you can separate that out when
So you really are making a butt fork. I told him to back off that one.
Yeah, I mean, the ALJ, the administrative judge, said he did not, quote, did not deem the agency's cooperation with the prosecutor's office a personnel action, close quote.
True, and I would add that that was not appealed to the Federal Circuit by Dr. Manivanan, which presumably he could have done if he had viewed that was an error that needed to be corrected. And I would say,
it certainly suggests that the ALJ did not think he had jurisdiction.
I don't know what he thought, but even if he did not have jurisdiction over a claim like that brought by Dr. Manivanan, that is not, I mean, as the Supreme Court said in Elgin, the MSPB can develop a factual record on a, let's say, is in that case a claim that constitutional rights were being violated.
So he makes a statement. What weight should we give it?
It should be accorded significant weight because, if nothing else, it shows that Dr. Manivanan was complaining of the...
No, I'm talking about the ALJ statement.
It's a question of law. It was not reviewed by the Federal Circuit, and it was still brought up. I mean, I recognize that the briefs in the Federal Circuit are not in the record in this case, but the disclosure of records from the agency to the prosecutor were also a section in Dr. Manivanan's brief to the Federal Circuit.
What's the government's position here? The ALJ said it's not a personnel action. You seem to be saying it is a personnel action. And it's a personnel action because everything that flows from the original dispute with Dr. Gammon is a personnel action because it's all part of the vendetta. Am I hearing you right?
As Dr. Manivanan has alleged this case.
I'm not interested in what you say he said. I'm asking for the government's legal position. Because I might have misunderstood. I thought you were sort of distancing yourself in the briefing from the idea that there was an argument for but-for causation, that instead you were saying, you know, something a little more nuanced than that. But hearing you at the podium, it sounds like what you're saying is, no, it is but-for causation. There's nothing that happens after that initial dispute that's not, in effect, a personnel action covered by the Civil Service Reform Act. Am I hearing you wrong?
I would not say that. I would not say it's but-for. I would say that, as in Cerullo, you need to take, the court takes a common sense view of what the CSRA is meant to do. It's not meant to allow for backdoor attacks or collateral reviews of personnel actions. And where a complaint centers on the person's status as a federal employee, which this one does, it's preempted by the CSRA. So we would ask for affirmance.
Before you sit down, just ask you one merits question. Did you move to dismiss Mr. Manny Vannon's Privacy Act claims under Rule 12b-6?
We did not expressly move under 12b-6, although as a legal question, the court can affirm on that ground as well.
So you say you didn't move to dismiss the privacy?
Did not, correct.
So why shouldn't, that means we probably shouldn't be getting into the merits here, should we?
We don't believe the court needs to, no.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Poff?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just four things I'd like to quickly address if I can. So the first is the MSPB was completely correct when it said it did not have jurisdiction over a Privacy Act claim. That's in the MSPB handbook. And for the Federal Circuit, the Federal Circuit has repeatedly ruled that Privacy Act cases have to go to the district court. So that's Raynone is a good case for that. There's also another case in our brief called Martin. I think the big question here is whether this court should interpret CSRA exclusion broadly or narrowly. So is it broad, everything coming out of employment, or is it more narrow, it's adverse personnel actions and prohibited personnel practices? If this court, we really think this court should
it's
use.
Like both of you are going for, it's either going to be a home run or a strikeout.
Well, I mean, I would take any, I would take anything, but I just want to say if you hold that CSRA preclusion is governed by the definition of a personnel action and a prohibited personnel practice, you will be in good company because that's how the court approached it in Kleiman in the DC District Court. There's actually a Supreme Court case called Whitman versus the Department of Transportation where it uses that same
rubric.
There's
also a Supreme Court case called Bush v. Lucas where the court said, quote, denying the First Amendment vitis claim, you can't have it because such claims arise out of an employment relationship that is governed by comprehensive procedural and substantive provisions.
That's right, Your Honor, but that case is dealing with the Bivens claim, which is a judicially created remedy.
Why,
and
I know you've said that, but why does it matter if you've got, I mean, the Constitution isn't judicially created. You're vindicating a right that people have.
Right, but I think that it's like when Congress has gone into an area to regulate it and give them the rights that they think that they should have, the courts want to be more careful. Whereas here, if you want to follow judicial restraint, you should actually not hold these claims to be precluded because doing so means you're invalidating something that Congress says Dr. Manny Vannon has under the Privacy Act. So
what do you think would happen if we said that this internal investigation ultimately resulting in a termination is not within the CSRA? How long do you think that decision would last before the Supreme Court?
Well, Your Honor, that the court in SysTac also held that investigations are not personnel actions. So you can't challenge. When we were in the MSPB, we couldn't challenge what Marissa Williams was doing in the investigation because, as I said, it's not a personnel action. And that is under the law. SysTac is the case we cite for it.
But this resulted in what?
Resulted in what? Well, it resulted in his termination, but we're not making a claim for damages from his termination. We're making a claim that it also resulted because that was taken and given to state prosecutors.
So you're saying, in effect, his resignation was, in effect, a termination, is that correct?
Well, there was a notice of proposed termination, and then he resigned before it ended. But we're not making a claim for damages stemming from any of that. We're not saying, and we're also not saying that, you know, the claims we're making here were part of a vendetta. Like the Privacy Act disclosures were Mark Hunsaker, and the conversion was Mark Hunsaker.
He seemed to say that. He seemed to say on numerous occasions that all the bad things that happened to him because he was being treated badly by his supervisors and that they wanted to get rid of him and that, in fact, the cooperation with the Center County DA's office was part and parcel of that. There's numerous places, I mean, we don't have the time, but we go in and read to you from the record where he says they were doing that to get me out. This was all part of them trying to get me out. Now, often when we're trying to figure out if something's covered or not by a pre-existing claim or a set of remedial provisions that the law provides, we ask, is this coming out of the same nucleus of operative fact And by his own terminology, in multiple places in the record, that's what your client seemed to be saying. So why shouldn't he be bound to what he has said on more than one occasion? Why isn't he, as the other side here, the government says, why shouldn't he be seen as trying to have it both ways, trying to work at the MSPB side of this all the way through, and then when he doesn't get what he wants, start saying, well, now I got these other things.
You're right. He's just trying to vindicate his rights. So if he has a right under the Privacy Act, he wants to pursue it. If somebody has, you know, taken his records and broken the law and given them to state prosecutors, he's going to pursue it. The fact that he has two claims doesn't mean that there's something improper about both of his claims. Now, to answer your question, I'm glad that I concede that he, in OSC pleadings and pro se statements, he may have said things that sweep broadly that say this is all part of a scheme and vendetta. But at the end of the day, what Mark Hunsaker did is not a personnel action. And what we're saying is this court really shouldn't, you know, because any kind of tort that happens to you while you're at work, you couldn't sue an agency for that now. And there are, you know, dozens and dozens of FTCA cases where federal employees sue the agency because they were hurt at, someone was negligent and they were hurt at work. But under the broad test of CSRA preclusion, they wouldn't be able to sue anyone because the MSPB can't hear those cases. And you know, if it happened at work, it's going to necessarily fail the but-for test. It's only going to happen as a result of the employment relationship.
Let's go back to your reliance on SysTech. I thought SysTech said that an internal investigation could constitute a personal action either on its own or as part of a broader set of circumstances if it rises to a level of a significant change in working conditions. Isn't that right? I'm quoting, so you probably...
Okay, yeah, so right. I accept that, Your Honor. That may be the case.
Is there not a significant change in working conditions here?
But I would say here the investigation, did you say that it results in or that it constitutes?
If it rises to the level of a significant change in working conditions.
Yeah, see, maybe you could say it results in a change in working conditions here, but it certainly doesn't rise to a level. Manny Vanden was like one day interviewed. That was the only, he didn't even know about the investigation most of the time it was going on. At a certain point.
Did it rise to the level? If it rises to the level of a significant change in working conditions. We've been on this before. I mean, you're saying his working conditions did not change significantly.
I'm saying that the investigation did not change his working conditions, except to the extent that he had to go and be interviewed. Now, as a result of the investigation.
Here's a guy who was so distressed by it that he couldn't go to the interview. He collapses. Here's a guy who, when he does go and he is interviewed, is clearly distressed, denies everything that which the interviewer later says it more politely than this, but says, in effect, you just lied. You lied throughout, you denied everything when the evidence is all against you. I mean, and he then says later, these people who were investigating were not doing a dispassionate interview. They were not conducting a fair interview. How is that not, in effect, a hostile environment, something that rises to a level? I mean, he seems to characterize that, again, now maybe you're going to say, well, that was him before he had counsel or something, but that's, he describes it that way. Why should we not hold him to what he said?
I mean, I'm not sure right. Well, I guess he thought it certainly was hostile for him when he was in that interview. And Your Honor, I would love to have the opportunity to litigate the substance of the finding of this report someday, because a lot of courts have been assuming that those allegations are correct, but they're not. But, doesn't the investigator have an obligation to not be negligent in conducting the investigation? There's other situations where if someone is negligent in what they're doing at work as a federal employee, the person who's harmed has the opportunity to challenge them.
But the allegation was not simply negligence. The allegation was this was part of an out-to-get-me scheme.
In this case, it's only a negligence allegation, and I'm not sure that there is an intentional allegation against Marissa Williams in the MSPB case. Because, again, Marissa Williams wasn't around when Dr. Maivanen was having these disputes with Dr. Gemmon. Dr. Gemmon had the agency hire her.
Well, we may be just circling around the same thing unnecessarily, yeah. But he certainly did characterize, I think you've acknowledged it already, he certainly did characterize the investigation as being ill-motivated.
Yes, it was initiated for bad reasons. We say that in the MSPB. Dr. Gemmon helped initiate the investigation.
And that it was carried out not merely in a negligent way, but in a way that was framed to further their desire to get rid of it.
I mean, I do think I do think it was in a way. But even if, but again, you have to also look at we think the investigation is not a personnel action. Again, what's supposed to be happening here, it is supposed to be a fair third-party thing. So that's why it is, the SysTech says.
You've made the point. You've made it well.
Yeah, okay.
So, close.
Okay. And I guess just on
you, I'd like to give you 30 more seconds.
Okay. On you, Yu's claim is literally that the Privacy Act violation caused me to be terminated, and I want to recover for my termination, or cause the agency to take some action against him. Dr. Maivanen's claim is that the Privacy Act violation caused the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania to wrongfully prosecute and convict him. So it's very different. Like the Pennsylvania prosecution cannot be a personnel action, obviously. The last thing I would say is just, again, thanks. Thank you.
We gave you both well over 20, 25 minutes, or I think the government would give a little over 20 minutes. Thank you to both counsel. Very spirited argument. We'll take the matter under advisement and appreciate your being here with us today.